You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome. This is another episode of To The Journey.
To the journey!
I'm one of your co-hosts, Charlene Schmidt, and with me, as he is every single week, is...
Tristan Riddell.
I am so excited because we had a really awesome thing happen this week to us, Tristan.
We
found a super fan of To The Journey and of Star Trek and just kind of geek culture in general, and it came from a place that I never would have thought of. And it's because I don't watch wrestling. And this person is Stardust of the WWE.
Stardust of the WWE. Like, he has a huge presence on Twitter. I think he has over 300,000 followers. And
yeah.
I know, like, some of our listeners have to be WWE fans. And even if you're not, you've probably heard of Stardust. That's his personality. And his real name is Cody Rhodes. He's the son of the Hall of Famer Dusty Rhodes. From the WWE, who recently passed away. So
yes, rest in peace.
Yes, rest in peace. We're sorry to hear about that. What happened was that some of our fellow Trek FMers reached out to Brandon Braga and said, hey, you should come on the show sometime. Stardust, Cody Rhodes, he follows Brandon Braga. And so he saw the tweet and then he said in tweet form, hey, I'd love to guest on To The Journey. And then he mentions me, the Insane Robin, and says, I'm watching you. And when I saw this, I was just like, okay, who, you know, I didn't see who it was. I just said, I was like, okay, who's this guy? Who wants to be on To The Journey? Like,
right. What? Yep. We have people who want to guest on the show a lot. And you may have noticed we do not do guests unless it's for a really important reason.
Yeah. Like whether you're, you know, whether you were involved with the show, like Larry Nemechek. Or like if we like, you know, we have cross promotion with other podcasts or something like that. We very, very rarely do it. But it turns out Stardust is a super geek.
He is.
He's huge in geek culture. And he like his personality, like his Stardust personality is way over the top, really big and very kind of comic book villainous. Really interesting. And I'm not a big wrestling fan. My grandma actually was a huge wrestling fan.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
And so, and my sister and my brother-in-law are big wrestling fans. And my sister is in love with Stardust. She has his action figure. Yeah.
Wow.
And I told her that that Cody Rhodes mentioned our show. It is a listener in our show. And she lost her mind.
That's fantastic.
And yeah, it's just like when he said he wanted to be on the show, I reached out to him. He contacted me back. Super nice guy. Really great. You know, really down to earth and is a big Star Trek fan and a big Voyager fan. Loves Janeway. Mm-hmm. He actually got into a Twitter spat with Shatner. Instigated by Shatner, by the way.
Of course. Mm-hmm. As he does.
Like the Stardust logo design, kind of borrowing the Delta Shield or something like that. And he used the hashtag Janeway all the way. To kind of dig at Shatner.
That a boy. I like him already.
Yeah, I thought you would like that. And he just, it was just really great to know that, you know, like we have all types of fans out there. We have veteran Star Trek fans who were fans of Star Trek ever since the 60s. We have fans of the To The Journey who just got into the show. We have people who are listening in Nome, Alaska, and we have people who have over 300,000 Twitter followers and are on TV all the time. You know, it's really great to know that we reach out to all those types of people.
Yeah, we reach.
We reach.
Yeah, we are not Herberts. That is really cool. Yes, we apparently do go, we span all walks of life around the whole wide world. That's the beauty of the internet. And so we just thought it would be really cool to mention this whole thing because I never would have thought.
It's just, you know, the Star Trek community is such a, is, it's a big community, but it's also close-knit. You know, it's small.
Right.
It's small in the realm of, you know, a lot of us know each other. You know, like,
yeah, that's it. So you think we would know something like this, but like I said earlier, I'm really sorry. I don't watch wrestling, so I didn't know much about this guy. I had to look him up. And yeah, he's a total Star Trek fan, total geek, loves geek culture. And, and that's fantastic. So we're very flattered and honored to have you as one of the our fans.
Yes, and if you're listening to this episode, thank you so much for the shout out. We thank you for promoting To The Journey. And
we
because that tweet got retweeted a whole bunch of times, and it's just great to have a listener like you who's who's willing to promote us and reach out to us.
Right, because with that many followers, you have such a huge influence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right. Well, let's get started with our week's topic, which is our favorite top five season five moments.
Top five, season five.
That's right. Season five. I believe this is your favorite season, is it not?
You know what? I think it is because, you know, I've been kind of going back and forth between season four and season five because those are such great seasons. But as I was going through this, as I was going through the episodes trying to find my favorite moments because it's not the best moments. It's not the most critical moments. It's our favorite moments. You and I.
Right. Subjective.
Completely subjective. So you guys like don't reach out to us and say, how can you say that's, you know, like that's the best moment of season five. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. You forgot about this and that. Yeah. We only have five.
Yeah.
That's the big problem and the limitation, but also the beauty of lists like these. We are limited only to five, and I don't know about you. I know I say this a lot, but man, I could have done 15. I could have done 20 just from this season alone because it is so solid. So I had to go with my absolute top favorites and leave a lot of others painfully behind.
Painfully behind, yeah.
Painful. It was painful.
There are so many great moments in season five because there's so many great episodes. Actually, I just want to read off a few of them.
Do it.
All right. So in season five, this is just season five. We have Drone, Extreme Risk, Timeless, Nothing Human, 30 Days, Counterpoint, Bride of Chaotica, Dark Frontier, Course Oblivion, Someone to Watch Over Me, 1159, Relativity, and Equinox. That's just some of them, okay?
Wow. Okay, imagine when we get to Essential Trek, how many of those we're going to keep.
Oh, it's going to be so... Like our Essential Trek for season five is just going to be watch season five.
I was just thinking that, too. That's what it's going to be. Just, you can't skip any of these. Don't do it.
Just
no.
Power through. Do it.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, all right, I'm dying to know now. In no particular order, of course, because we never do.
Yes.
What is your first pick from season five?
Okay, so this one, like in no particular order, because I'm jumping all around. It's not temporal. It's not my favorite, like from one to five or anything like that, or five to one.
Right.
This one I know is going to be on your list. It absolutely has to be on your list, and I'm going to be ashamed if it's not.
Really?
And so right out of the gate, it's going to be number one. And so it's going to be episode six, Timeless. And that's Voyager's crash in Timeless.
Ah, I gotcha. Okay, here's what happened. This, of course, was the first thing I thought of for the list.
Okay.
And I thought, but there are so many things that I like about Timeless. And I will tell you that I have a Timeless pick on my list because how could I not? It is probably my favorite episode, or at least one of them, you know, top five of five favorite episodes. But I did not put this on my list. Because I knew you would do it. Because
you knew I would. That's not fair. Okay.
Well, this is how we play this game. Come on, we've done this so many times. You can't get me for that.
All right. I'll forgive it this once. But with Timeless, as you know, like it's a great episode. And for those of you who don't know, it's or don't remember, it's that episode where they discover slipstream technology. They get it to work on Voyager. And Harry and Chakotay have to fly in a shuttle in front of them to kind of navigate the waters. Something goes wrong. Voyager crashes on an ice planet and everyone dies and Harry and Chakotay go to the Alpha Quadrant, live their lives, I think, for like the next 10 years? 15 years. And then they find a way to get back to the Delta Quadrant and get the Doc, who's frozen and who is a survivor, and they find a way to send a message back in time so that Voyager never actually makes a flight or gets the right gets the right flight corrections and then survives and nobody dies. So a big reset button. But an intentional reset button, like the story is around the reset button. It's intentional.
Yes, a very interesting use of the reset button. I mean, the reset button actually has a very important purpose in this episode.
Yes, very much so. And here's the thing is that crash at the beginning, we've talked about it so many times. And so I won't bore the fans, the listeners with this, but it's amazing. It was stellar CGI when they made it, and it's stellar CGI now. You can tell it's a little dated, but it's still really, really, really good.
It still looks really good. It does.
And they use that as the opener to the episode. And so...
Well, it's pretty early on, yeah.
Yeah, pretty early on. And Voyager's crashing, and then it hits hard. One of the nacelles rips off, snow's flying everywhere, and you're doing the shaky camera thing, and it just boom, and then end of teaser. And it's just cool.
It's pretty, pretty brutal. I mean, you thought the Enterprise D crashing in Generations was bad.
Yeah.
This is even more brutal.
Yeah, it looked because in Generations it's just the saucer, and so it looks like something that's meant to slide and kind of shake through and everything like that. But with the Intrepid class, it is totally not meant to land like this.
Not at all. No, it's meant to land on those little chicken legs. But they didn't have a prayer compared to what happened here. Yeah, yeah. How can you not put this on the list? I think it is one of the most iconic moments in all of Voyager. It is just something you don't ever forget. It was that good.
And it hurts your heart when you see it because, you know, you love that ship so much. You love that crew so much. So whenever you see it explode or crash or get destroyed, you're just like, ah.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh.
Ah. Ooh. Ah.
Yes.
So, okay. Definitely. So that's my number one. What's yours?
Okay, well, since we're talking about Timeless, I'll reveal my Timeless pick,
okay,
since it is number one on my list anyway, and that is Future Harry's YES! As he saves Voyager from impending doom 15 years in the past, and, like, this scene has such incredible ups and downs for poor Harry. He goes from, like, oh crap, 15 years of planning or writing on this, and it's unraveling, it's not gonna work, and I'm ruining everything, to I am superhero Harry, and then boom, he's dead, and it's totally worth it because it worked. And I think this is the best acting we get from Garrett Wong in the entire series. And we should also note that Timeless is Wong's favorite episode, and I would say with good reason, because I think this is one of Harry's finest moments, for sure.
I think so too, and it really shows off Wong's acting ability. You know, it really shows off his chops.
Absolutely. He can act. He has good range. He didn't get nearly enough of a chance to really express it, but he did in this episode. He really shines in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, because of the emotion going on in that scene, and you're with Harry the whole way, you're just, oh no, it's not going to work. Are you kidding me? And to, oh my God, it did work. Hallelujah. And you're going up and down with him. It's just incredibly well acted, and since it is Wong's favorite scene, or not scene, but episode as well, I decided to go with this one rather than the crash. Or my honorable mention, which I gotta mention, of course, is Janeway and Chakotay in the candlelit dinner, complete with flowers and soft music, where they talk about what's for dessert. I mean, I just get warm and fuzzy thinking about it.
And they're totally platonic when they're talking about dessert.
Oh, you know it. Yeah, they had banana splits. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, that out of the way now, what is your second pick?
Okay, so, my second pick, and I'm sure you have something from this episode too. I mean, like, we have such similar tastes when it comes to season 5.
It's hard not to have duplicates. Episode you're going to talk about right now.
Yeah, I know. As you know, like, but the beauty of this episode is that there's so many fantastic moments that I'm sure we both picked this episode, but I'm sure your moment is not my moment and vice versa. So,
let's see.
This is Bride of Chaotica.
Surprise.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. Episode 12. For those of you who don't remember the episode, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, are you under a rock? Are you a Voyager fan? Have you seen Voyager?
Yeah, have you seen Voyager? Because if you don't remember this episode, stop listening to us right now. Go watch the episode and then come back.
Yeah.
So I'm not even going to explain it to you, but it's my favorite moment. And I've said this before. I love this moment so much. I think about it all the time. They're in the briefing room, and everyone's trying to, get up to snuff. Tom's trying to tell everybody what's going on because he's the only one. You know, he created the program, and so he knows. He's trying to explain why it's cheesy, why everything's weird and from the 50s and everything like that. So Janeway says, let me get this straight. Transdimensional aliens have mistaken your Captain Proton simulation for reality. Yes, ma'am. And now an armed conflict has broken out between these aliens and Chaotica's holographic army. And then Paris replies with, yes, ma'am, his army of evil.
And yes.
I can't do it justice. Like, I should actually, you know what? I'm gonna include the clip right here.
Let me get this straight. Transdimensional aliens have mistaken your Captain Proton simulation for reality.
Yes, ma'am.
And now an armed conflict has broken out between these aliens and Chaotica's holographic army.
Yes, ma'am. His army of evil.
See, his delivery is just amazing. It's just
so great.
It's just so deadpan. It's so dry. It's yes, ma'am. His army of evil. You know, it's just so perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I laugh just thinking about it. It's so good, and I knew this was the one you were gonna pick.
Yeah,
knew it. Just because you have mentioned it before. I mean, I kind of have the upper hand in this sort of thing because I've known you this long. I know exactly where your mind is heading. And for the record, I did not choose it just because I knew that this was going to be on your list and figured you needed to have it. However, the same scene is my next pick. And, you know, as you said, Bright of Chaotica, hello, this is kind of a must. And there are so many good things that we could put on this one. The one I went with was Janeway's realization that she is playing Queen Arachnia. Like, she thinks Seven is the one who Tom is going to nominate, and so she kind of gives a little smile and a wink over in Seven's direction. Who did you have in mind? And then Tom is deadpanning right on her. She looks at him, and, oh, no, 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 no. Like, the way her face falls with it just fills with dread. I love that moment so much because she knows she's not getting out of it.
It's so, like, this one scene has so many gems in it, and that is a huge one. And there's another one where, like, Chakotay says, how do you propose to defeat Chaotica? Paris goes, well, he's been attacking the aliens with his death ray. And Tuvok, of course, says, it's a shame we don't have one.
Yeah, that's a very underrated moment. Tuvok always gets those good straight lines, and Tim Russ delivers them with such perfection. Ah, yeah, that really gets overlooked in this scene, but that's so good.
Yeah, this is probably one of my favorite scenes in all of Voyager.
It's so solid. Yeah, I have to agree with you. How can you not? Fantastic. Okay, so we took care of the really important bases here, I feel. For season 5, we have Timeless covered, we have Bright of Chaotica covered. Where are we going to go next?
Where we're going next is a little trip down memory lane to Drone, episode 2 of season 5.
Very good.
I love this episode. I love the character of One. I think he's great. I love the idea of a 29th century Borg. He is tricked out. He's cool. He's got great armor, great lights. He can transport himself. He can do all these kind of cool things that the Borg can't yet do. And I love the relationship between One and Seven. I think it was very well written. It's very well played out. We've talked about this moment before, and the moment at the end when One realizes that the Borg are never going to stop chasing after Voyager if he's still there because they want his technology. A 29th century Borg will literally leap the Borg forward centuries ahead in technology, and they could become unstoppable, which they almost are already. And that moment when he covers himself in a force field so that the dock can't operate on him, and he's killing himself on purpose to save the people he loves, i.e. Seven. And Seven commands him to stop. You must comply. Stop. And then all of a sudden there's a change in her face. She gets emotional and says, you're hurting me. Which was a callback to the beginning of the episode where he is downloading information from her cerebral cortex, and he's doing it too much and too fast. And she says, okay, you're hurting me. Okay. Like, she's it's physical pain. And he stopped, and then now she's referencing the emotional pain. And that just gets to me, you know? It just tugs at the heartstrings.
Yeah, I just have something in my eye. I'm not crying.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's dusty.
Oh, it's horrible right now. Yeah, I just, yeah. I think I got a lash in the loose or something.
But yeah, it makes you cry. I mean, and Jerry Ryan's delivery is perfect. I mean, like, a lot of these moments, that I've picked have been just spot on delivery. It's not, I think like Voyager's crash is like the only grandiose moment that I've picked. All of the other ones are little small little moments of delivery that I think are really perfect. And this is definitely one of them.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And Drone was one of my honorable mentions. This scene, exactly. Just, yeah, Jerry Ryan nails it. Voyager really had a top-notch cast. And when they gave them good material, boy, could they just take it and run with it. They really could. And they did give Jerry Ryan great material. And this episode is just one of many examples. But this one really does tug at the heartstrings just because it almost transcends a level of emotion where she's hurting so much, you are hurting for her. It's like she reaches out of the screen and just takes your heart and pulls it right out of your chest, and she's hurting you. And, oh, yeah, it's heavy.
It works. Heavy. It works.
It does. It really does work.
All right, what's your next one?
Well, I think the next one I'm going to go with is also Seven of Nine related, and it's the ending of Someone to Watch Over Me.
Oh, I was so hoping you brought this one up.
This is just another really awesome bright spot. For those of you who don't remember, this is the one where the Doctor teaches Seven of Nine dating 101, and in doing so, develops feelings for her. And the scene in particular, the moment I picked, was the ending scene, where Seven kind of concludes from her experiences that there are no suitable mates for her on Voyager, so it's really not necessary for her to continue her dating lessons with the Doctor. And of course, this breaks the Doctor's heart, as well as all of the hearts of the relationshippers out there who were screaming, no, 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 Seven, Doctor, the Doctor's the perfect mate for you. But instead of the happy ending, this one kind of ends poignantly with the Doctor playing Someone to Watch Over Me on the piano in Sandrine's. Mm-hmm. And we just gently fade out. And that's the episode. It leaves you with yearning like crazy.
Mm-hmm. This was this was a fantastic moment because it definitely gave us... This is like a Batman moment. Like, it was the moment that we needed, not necessarily what we deserved. Or, wait, oh, no, it's the reverse of that. It's the moment that we deserved, not necessarily what we needed. It was...
Or wanted.
It's so many... Like you said, so many fans were like, no, they should be together. I completely disagree. I think...
Yes, I know you do.
It should have been treated exactly the way that it was. Doctor pines over Seven. Seven's a little oblivious. And it doesn't happen because... The guy doesn't always get the girl. The girl doesn't always get the guy. You know, it doesn't always pan out. The will they or won't they sometimes is the won't they.
Right. Yeah.
And sometimes that happens, and I don't think we see that enough in TV. And I felt like this was an arc for the Doc because he got heartache. He had the unrequited love. And that needed, everybody has that in their human experience. And that was a part of his human experience.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the reason why it had to happen this way. Because they would be a good compatible couple. That would just be too easy, though. You know what I mean? Where, that would be great. They could learn together. They could grow together. They could live happily ever after. Well, where's the fun in that?
Where's the drama? Where's the conflict?
There is no real drama. And so the drama comes in that not happening and the heartache. And like you said, we've all gone through that. Unrequited love is incredibly painful. It's something we all experience at some point or another. And this is a great, great pairing for that to happen to.
And devotees of the journey will remember that we believe that the actual perfect pairing for Seven is Data.
Right. Yes. Yes. Make that happen, Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Yeah.
Good times.
All right. So good. What's your choice. Next pick? Thank you.
Well, my next pick is episode 13, Gravity.
Ooh, okay.
I love this episode. I think this is a very underrated episode.
I think you're right. I often overlook it myself.
Yeah, I do too. I always forget about this episode, even though I love it so much. And Lori Petty, I'm a big Lori Petty fan. And you might have seen her recently in Orange is the New Black season 2.
Mm-hmm. Indeed I have, because I love Orange is the New Black.
Yes, and the moment that I chose from this is at the very end of the show. This is one of those poignant moments where, for those of you who don't remember, the Doc, Tom, and Tuvok get trapped in a gravity well where time passes faster than it does outside of the gravity well. So 2 days in normal space is actually 2 months within the gravity well. So they think Voyager's gone and forgotten them, and Voyager's actually trying to get them out. But there was another woman who was trapped in the gravity well named Nos, played by Lori Petty, and they all develop a friendship. They kind of help each other out. They try to help each other survive because there's raiders, of course.
Naturally.
They eat spiders together. It's very quaint. And Nos develops feelings for Tuvok. Now, obviously, Tuvok can't reciprocate these feelings because he's a Vulcan as well as a married Vulcan.
Indeed.
And Tom kind of plays a jerk move where he kind of pushes the relationship. He tries to push Tuvok towards Nos, even though he's married, because his rationale is, you never know if we're going to get out of here. Tuvok says, that's not enough for me to abandon my wife. So Tuvok tries to let Nos down easy, and he can't figure out a way to do it because there's just this disconnect with him and emotion for obvious reasons. So there's this moment in the transporter room. They're all safe. They were rescued, and Paris says goodbye to Nos and takes – they're in the transporter room, and Paris smartly takes the crewman out of the transporter room, the transporter chief out of the room. And Tuvok and Nos has this moment, and Nos apologizes, and Tuvok asks her why, and she says, I know how difficult this was for you, for us. I just wish things had been different. And Tuvok says, as do I. And Tuvok takes a moment and puts his hand on her face and mind melds with her, and a little bit of time goes by. She starts to smile, and she goes, I understand. Thank you. And it was just such a touching moment. It was so...
Yeah.
It was so beautiful because we didn't need to hear. We didn't need to hear what Tuvok was saying because it was beyond words. There were no words to capture his feelings for her because he did have feelings for her, but he could not express them while staying true to his wife. And so in order to explain the situation, saying like, I'm a Vulcan, I'm married, even though you're a lovely woman, I cannot reciprocate those feelings. He did it with a Vulcan gesture, and it was perfect. It was a perfect moment. And I love how it ends too, because he puts his hands up and says, live long and prosper. And she replies with, you too. You know, like name another time that has happened in Star Trek. I don't remember it, because most people either reply back with a live long and prosper, or say peace and long life, or don't say anything at all. They don't say like, ditto, you know, like.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, dude.
Thanks. You know, I loved it, and I think it was a solid moment. And I know I described probably more, I set the scene probably a little bit too much, but I just love that moment.
I'm so glad you picked it, because again, yeah, I did not think about this moment, and the beauty of it is indeed the fact that you could just show it, you didn't have to tell it.
Right.
You know, I think as a viewer, we know enough about Tuvok and Vulcans and whatnot about how touching of a gesture this really was, and to see it connect and have it understood.
Right.
You know, where Tuvok is coming from, she gets where he's coming from now, and she appreciates that. Just, yeah, it is very touching. I cannot agree more with everything that you said, so I'll just be quiet.
And Vulcans don't just mind meld with anyone.
No, you know? They don't. It is considered a somewhat intimate gesture, right?
And I don't really like when they move away from that sometimes. Like, you know, it's an intimate act, but when it's not an intimate act, it's usually a dire situation. Like they're trying to get information, or like Tuvok was trying to help Suder with his rehabilitation. You know, like it's never really done casually, but sometimes it's not intimately. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think what you're saying is sometimes it's done out of necessity because there's no other better way.
Right, yeah. Sometimes it's done out of necessity. When it's not intimate, it's necessary.
There you go.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's logical?
Therefore, it's logical. For the most part. For the most part.
Usually.
There are some exceptions.
Yes. All right. Well, I think the next pick I'm going to go for is Janeway touring her ship with Admiral Patterson in Relativity.
I picked this is my last pick, too. Not the tour, but some moments from the episode.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I really love this moment. I love the way this kind of played out. I mean, the Bun of Steel is back, and this feels like a missing scene from Caretaker, if you will. And I don't know. I love her commentary on things, like how the bridge is bigger than she thought it would be, and something about it just makes me really nostalgic for when Voyager was getting started. You know, all the hype leading up to it and when it debuted. We were so excited for this series, and it just brings all of those memories flooding back. And so I feel that accomplishes a lot.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, just, yeah, I think you hit it on the head perfectly. Nostalgia, it makes you think back to Caretaker. And I love when we get to see stuff behind the scenes. Like, it's, you know, things that were only mentioned on the show. I'm not phrasing it quite right, but it's, I don't know, it's like in All Good Things when we saw the Enterprise D in dry dock.
Right. It's like that.
Yeah, yes. It's so much. I love that. You're just like, it's like you're getting a sneak peek behind the curtain.
And, exactly.
And yeah, I whenever we can see Utopia Planitia, you know, that is a fantastic moment for any Star Trek fan. And it was very much like when the camera's panning around and you see all the ships, and then all of a sudden you have that, and there she is. You have that moment again.
Right.
And it's great. And like you said, the Bun of Steel makes a return, and that's enough right there.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean, granted, that happens several times, but this one is extra special because of all the rest that comes with it.
I agree.
Okay, so with that being your last pick, you said it's in this episode, but it's not that moment. So what
is
it?
Okay, so it's a tie. I'm cheating a little bit.
You cheating again? Really? God, you cheater.
I cheat all the time when it comes to these list episodes that we do.
What am I going to do with you?
So it's a tie between the Admiral and Janeway chasing after Seven without knowing that they're chasing after Seven.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
And thus ending in her death.
Yeah.
Because it's just so cool because they transport her out to the starship Relativity and she just falls down and the guys goes up and goes, she's dead. Kind of like it harkens back from TOS.
Right.
And it was just a great shocker. And right before the commercial break, you're just like, oh. And
Oh, no, they didn't.
Jeez.
Sorry.
You do that a few times throughout the show and it makes me just shake my head every single time.
Why?
It's just so weird. It's like I was like, where is this? 1996? What's going on?
Hey, I was a 90s kid.
And we're talking about a show that was popular in 1996. So,
exactly.
You know.
It's all that in a bag of chips, buddy.
Oh, God.
Okay, I'll stop.
I was like, talk to the hand, Char. Jeez.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, I'm on a roll now. We better stop.
Okay, so it's that scene and then tied with the ping pong scene where...
Oh.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Where there's a temporal anomaly, you know, like Tom hits the ping pong ball really, really hard. It freezes in the air. Seven scans it. And then everybody's like, what's going on? And then out of nowhere, it just continues to fly on. And then Neelix looks at his pad and hits his pad to say point. And it's just it's like that delivery was Ethan Phillips' delivery was so comedically perfect.
It was. Yeah. Neelix, he's typically... Panned is the funny guy, and a lot of times they give him kind of hokey, stupid, shtick kind of humor
right.
to do. But this was great. This was good Neelix comedy. Fantastic.
Good, subtle Neelix comedy, absolutely.
Yeah, I love it. Good pick.
All right, you have one more, is that right?
I do. Yeah, we're going to get a little serious now. Because I'm going to go to the very first episode of Season 5, Night. Where Janeway is going through a depression and Voyager's going through absolute blackness. They encounter the Melon, and I'm not going to go any further into the episode because I'm going to focus specifically on the scene where, like, it's the first scene between Janeway and Chakotay in her quarters, and it opens just with us seeing her silhouette, which is really cool. You know something is up. And it's followed by this really introspective Janeway replaying the events of the last 4 years, really doubting herself now that she's had some hindsight, her guilt, her regret, her loneliness. I mean, they've all caught up to her, and it's refreshing to see that even Starfleet captains, who they often make the rest of us look like stupid, lazy chumps, they're still humans too at their core. And I think we take for granted how easy the captains make it look to keep things together, like under considerably stressful situations. And so it's kind of a nice break from the hero captain, and then instead, we're dealing with a real human being underneath, and they're not invincible, and they have a heavy burden of command. It's not lost on them. And I know we've mentioned this scene a lot, and we've mentioned that this happens to Picard and family after his assimilation in the Borg. But I got to thinking about the other one that I really like, and that was from Jeffrey Hunter's portrayal of Captain Pike with the burden of command, where he says, "You bet I'm tired. I'm sick of deciding which, you know, who to send out on the landing party and who lives and who dies."
Yeah, he hits that really hard. He's like, "Who lives
and who dies?"
You know, yeah.
Yeah, it's heavy. So that really sums up just how incredibly, like, if this were a real thing, just how much pressure it really would be. And so it makes sense that this happened to Janeway, and I'm glad it did. I'm really glad it did. We have talked about Knight a lot, so I'm going to stop here. Is there anything you want to add?
About Knight, not specifically, because, I mean, we mentioned this a lot in episode 102, I Need My Pain.
Yep.
That is
We talk about depression.
We talk about depression, we talk about mental illness, and it's a, it seemed to be a popular episode with the fans, and if you want to hear our thoughts about Knight in that moment, go listen to episode 102. We think you'll like it. But yeah, I think that's a perfect moment to end on. But I do have one honorable mention.
Name it.
Prax!
Oh! How could we not have a top five season five moments without Prax?
I know. Counterpoint, episode 10. everybody knows it, loves it. If you've listened to the show even like twice, you've probably heard us use that sound effect.
We haven't used it recently, and so we really need to bring it back.
I think so too.
I mean, Prax is to us what the barrel roll is to the ready room.
Yes.
So that's fantastic. Thank you for remembering that. Season 5 moments are not the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM this week, and so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
So now we're going to have to spend like a half an hour talking about these Star Trek comics when I could be reading Star Wars comics.
Yes.
I hope the listeners appreciate the sacrifices that we're making to bring this moderately entertaining podcast to them.
Earl Grey.
We divide the ship into one of two ways. Port goes to port. I better not see any starboard guys on the starboard phaser target practice. You guys know which side of the ship you're on.
The Orb.
Also, the original title of this episode was A Matter of Breeding, which, when we talk about things feeling TNG-ish, that could have been a Riker episode.
The Ready Room.
It's about people and feelings and emotions. It's about philosophy. It's about the future. It's about hope. It's about glory. It's about intellectual promise. That's what Axanar is about. It is not a story about pew, pew, pew. I promise you that.
To the journey! Well, you telling me that I need to make love to this alien woman or she's going to die? Well, for king and country, you know what I'm saying?
Right, only on Star Trek.
Warp 5.
I remember watching Broken Bow when Enterprise first debuted when I was in high school. I remember revisiting it now in full, and I had forgotten the fact that Future Guy had actually played an integral role from the get-go with Silic and the Sulaban, which we'll talk about later in the show.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
But you would never pick up on that based on the way that it plays out, aside from the fact that they explicitly tell you in the dialogue, you know?
The 602 Club.
The prequels are the most autobiographical works that Lucas has done. Because if you follow Anakin's arc, he comes onto the scene, nobody's seeing him coming, and then he's a wunderkind, but he doesn't know what to do with it, and he's overwhelmed and feels a bit trapped.
Literary Treks.
Deep Space Nine, among all the Star Trek series, is the one that really, over time, and I'm talking about now on the television series, not just in the books, changed the most.
Axanar, the official podcast.
It is the spirit of TOS that matters that's being captured, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the aesthetic. The aesthetic was 1966 to 1969 that had its moment, it had its time, and there's a certain amount of charm still to that. But it doesn't allow you to push the narrative forward because that type of aesthetic holds creativity back, in my opinion.
Women at Warp.
My absolute favorite thing about this episode is that this is a love potion only if it's between a man and a woman. They make it explicitly clear that if you touch two men or two women, they just become really good friends.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We're available on any kind of a platform. Regardless of what you have, you can get our podcasts, all 20 of them, which is amazing. And and unfortunately, it does cost a lot to produce and distribute and get storage and bandwidth for all of these shows. We want to take a moment to thank the lovely people on Patreon who are helping us out by being monthly subscribers. If you haven't checked this out, go to patreon.com/trekfm. We have various levels that you can contribute on a monthly basis. At $25 a month, you can do a really cool thing, which is the Patrons Roundtable, where the hosts and the patrons, we come up with a meeting time, get together, and talk some kind of facet of Star Trek. And then the result of that goes into the master feed. So give those a listen if you're interested and haven't heard about that yet. Now for TTJ, we want to thank Aaron Harvey, Jamie Deuce, and Kenneth Tripp for being our associate producers. Thank you very much, guys. You can follow Aaron on Twitter at GeekFilter. So, this was a lot of fun, but you know what's even funner? Star Trek Las Vegas.
That's right, Star Trek Las Vegas, and you're going to have double the amount of fun because I'm not going to be able to go this year, but you are, and you're going to share your experience with the listeners.
Yes, I am. I am going to have you along with me in spirit. We're going to have a lot of Voyager stuff happening because Star Trek Las Vegas is celebrating the 20th anniversary of the show's debut, so it's going to be tons of stuff. The entire cast is going to be there for a panel and photos, and it's going to be so incredible, and I cannot wait to talk all about it. I'm sure I'm going to be just going crazy on Twitter and taking photos and all of that, and I'm going to talk about it here and let you know about all that you missed.
Well, I cannot wait to hear about your experiences, and I'm sure all of our listeners can't wait either, but they're going to have to.
That's right, and this has been, until then, To the Journey.
To the Journey!